All right, y'all, welcome to the show. Right off the bat here, we're going to be discussing the Republican Civil War yet again. They're imploding. They're trying to oust their speaker after they just ousted the other one like 7 seconds ago. So we got a new name has thrown their hat into the ring to fight back against Mike Johnson. Then we'll get to that big story, man. There's a valedictorian at USC who was supposed to deliver a speech at the graduation in May, and she is being censored and banned because she might bring up Palestine. So, a lot to say about that. It is deplorable what's happening to her. We'll get to a really interesting poll that just came out on Trump's hush money trial, what the American people think of it, how is it going to impact the presidential race, the potential outcomes. There's a lot of stuff in there, and some of it's actually kind of contradictory, so it'll be interesting to like get into all the details. Then later on in the show, we will discuss the election rigging lies that were told by all of the right-wing outlets. They are definitely catching up to them. So we already know about, what was it, $787 million settlement that Fox News did with Dominion. Well, now Smartmatic is getting in on the fun, and I'll tell you the new information we have on that front. So we got all that and more. Everybody do me a big favor. Subscribe to the channel. What are you doing with your life if you haven't subbed? Hook a brother up with a sub. Cost you nothing. Helps us out massively. And a massive thank you to everybody who supports the show on Patreon. You guys know we couldn't do it without you. I've never talked to an advertiser before, so you guys fund this show from the ground up. I'm deeply, deeply appreciative. All right, let's dive into it here. Oh, I just kicked the camera. Axios is reporting that there's a new Republican who threw his hat in the ring to stand up to Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. Quote, "We are screwed. Second House Republican joins Mike Johnson ouster effort." So the original one was Marjorie Taylor Greene. The new one is Thomas Massey. Conservative Representative Thomas Massey is joining Marjorie Taylor Greene in her efforts to oust Speaker Mike Johnson after the Louisiana Republican announced plans to bring multiple foreign aid bills to the floor. So this is apparently the biggest point of contention. Is that actually the case? I don't know. We'll dive a little bit deeper. But they say, hey, the funding of Israel and the funding of Ukraine. Now, almost all of the Republicans, bar maybe a handful, are in favor of sending money to Israel. Ukraine is a little more complicated. I would say probably like 70% of the Republicans want to send more money to Ukraine, 60, 70%. But some of them don't. Okay. Johnson's speakership is the most precarious place it's been, is in the most precarious place it's been since taking over the gavel, coming under fire from conservatives over his handling of an array of policy issues. Massey told the room he feels Johnson should resign and asserted he would co-sponsor the motion to vacate. Green for weeks has threatened to force a vote on his ouster over Ukraine aid, doubling down despite former President Trump asserting he stands with Johnson. That's actually really interesting. So the big guy, the man in charge, the head guy, Donald Trump, says, no, MAGA's with Mike Johnson, but Marjorie Taylor Greene and now Thomas Massey are like, we don't care. Massey's comments were met with boos from the majority of the conference, two members confirmed. Interesting. It's a clusterfuck, one member said, adding, Johnson got a round of applause. Quote, we are screwed, another member told Axios. Members have asserted that they don't want additional chaos with another ouster, but with the slim majority Johnson faces, some of his most difficult hurdles yet. Some Democrats have said they will bail Johnson out on the floor so he does not meet a similar fate to his predecessor, former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So you guys remember when Kevin McCarthy was ousted, it was Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert who were kind of leading the charge. There was a ragtag group of like, what was it, between 6 or 8 Republicans who revolted. They did the motion to vacate. They successfully got him out of there. And the argument made against Kevin McCarthy is basically like, hey, man, you're a sellout. Hey, man, you're giving the Democrats way too much. And so Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert did their little virtue signaling bills where they were like, we're in favor of cutting the budget by a lot of money. And they proposed it. And these bills literally didn't even pass the Republican House. Never mind passing the Senate. Impossible. Never mind being signed by Biden. Impossible. So the fact that Kevin McCarthy was in a position where he had no choice, but he had to talk to Democrats and make deals, that was enough for these people to go, you're a massive sellout. Kevin McCarthy agrees with Matt Gaetz on like 99% of political issues. The idea that they made this, like, you know, you're not with me. It's just not true. They agree with each other. Honestly, a lot of it was Matt Gaetz wanting to virtue signal on social media and act like he's the purest of all the Republicans. But I love it. I actually support it because it brings about a tremendous amount of chaos on the right. And that's glorious. So now, remember, Marjorie Taylor Greene was big in favor of Kevin McCarthy. Now, she's the one who's leading the charge trying to oust Johnson. And she makes him argue, oh, he's a sellout. Oh, he's working with Democrats. Oh, look at the, you know, Ukraine funding and all that stuff. So here, I got a clip here from Massey. This is him talking about the meeting with Republicans where he was booed and Johnson was cheered. Listen.
There's only one person right now who can stop us from going into what happened last fall, and that's Mike Johnson. He's cleaning the barn. That's obvious.
So you want him to resign? You want him to resign?
Yes. Yeah, I asked him to resign.
What did he say?
He said he would not. And then I said, well, you're the one who's going to put us into this. Because the motion is going to get called, okay? Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called. And then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy. And I have told him this in private, like weeks ago.
And there are just so many questions, Wolf, still about how this will play out. One, about the critical policy issues, the aid to Ukraine, to Israel, to Taiwan that has been stalled here in the House for more than 2 months now. Will Mike Johnson have the votes to actually advance that? That is an open question. Mike Johnson's new plan has not been formally released yet, even as the Speaker is trying to push it. And then what do those conservatives do? What do Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie do? Do they actually call for that vote? They can do that, and they can force a vote within 2 legislative days. And then what will Democrats do? Will they actually save Johnson? There are some members of the House Democratic Caucus who have told me that they, in fact, will save Mike Johnson, especially if he moves down the way they want him to move on Ukraine aid in particular. So a key moment here for the Speaker and the Republican majority, which has devolved into bitter infighting and chaos, now threatening the second Speaker after the first Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, was ousted last fall in unprecedented fashion. Never before in American history has a Speaker been kicked out by his own colleagues. Could a second Speaker happen to be kicked out now? That is an open question. Is Mike Johnson's speakership now in peril?
So it looks like what's going to happen. This is Mike Johnson's response to this. It looks like what they're going to do is separate the Israel aid and the Ukraine aid, right? And the theory is, well, because I'm separating these bills out, the Israel one is going to pass, but the Ukraine one is going to get blocked, and then that'll appease the Republicans who don't want to send aid to Ukraine, and he'll be able to save his job. The other thing is, I genuinely don't know if what Massey says is true, that he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy, that Johnson's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy, because in retrospect, a lot of the people who wanted to oust McCarthy, they felt like, well, we kind of made a mistake doing that. And so are they going to do the same thing now? Because the fact of the matter is, the rub on Republicans is chaotic, extreme, incapable of getting anything done, incredibly fractured, petty. Like, this is the view of Republicans in Congress, not just among the media, but also that's the vibe you get among voters now, too, is that Republicans have been constantly punished for going full MAGA, for doing stunts like this, right? Now, on the one hand, I respect the fact that there are some people who are willing to stand up and fight from within the caucus. But on the other hand, the things they're fighting over are mostly dumb. There's a handful where I actually agree, believe it or not. So, like, some of these hardline Republicans teamed up with progressive Democrats to say, we don't want to expand the illegal warrantless spying. Fuck FISA. We're done with that. We don't want to do that. And so they fought. They weren't able to get everything they wanted, but they were able to lower the number of years that the program was reapproved for, down from 5 years to 2 years. Again, that's because progressive Democrats got together with, like, hardcore right-wingers. And so that's actually a rare area where I agree with them, and I agree with the fight and respect the fight, and I'm happy they did do the fight. But on a lot of these other issues, it doesn't, like, they're just wrong, right? So, like, one of the big things that they get mad at Mike Johnson for is he's also going to do a spending bill with the Democrats. You can't not do that if you're Speaker of the House, right? Like, you have to do it. You're not getting enough concessions. There's only so many that they can get, right? You don't have the numbers. You don't have the numbers in the Senate. You don't have the presidency. Like, what do you want a Republican Speaker to do, even if you're a hardcore right winger? From Massey's perspective, I understand him a little more in particular because he's like a Ron Paul style libertarian. He's totally against any and all foreign aid stuff. Now we're what, in like the 12th round of aid to Ukraine and the 5th round of aid to Israel as they're doing a fucking genocide. And so he's like, I don't want either one of those bills to pass. I don't want Israel aid. I don't want Ukraine aid. No way. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene is also like, I'm not sure where she is on Israel aid, but I know that on Ukraine aid, she's against it. And so there's another, like, rare issue where I'm kind of with them on the substance, but the fact of the matter is, literally any person you pick to be the Republican Speaker of the House, they are in a completely untenable, unwinnable situation. Because it's impossible to both govern and please the hardcore MAGA members, right? Massey's not MAGA. Marjorie Taylor Greene is. But like, you can't, with a broad caucus, you just can't appease them all. It's just not possible, right? And at some point, you just have one or two more Republican Congress people resign, and then Hakeem Jeffries is going to be speaker. So, like, they have a complete and utter lack of unity. And again, on the one hand, that's respectable because some people are standing up and fighting for some things, even if I don't agree with them on all the specifics of what they're fighting for. But on the other hand, it is also just absolute chaos. It's chaos and it's gridlock and nothing at all can get done. And no matter who takes this position, they're going to be accused of being a sellout. They're going to be accused of getting soft, right? And so, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But I just like when Gates took out McCarthy, I supported that. I support them gunning for Mike Johnson, too. Because then, by the way, after that, who the hell are you guys going to pick next? Right? Who are you going to pick next? The whole point of Mike Johnson was like, we don't like anybody here. And he's the one who seems most likable among all the factions. So I guess we'll just give it to Mike Johnson. Like, that's where we're at. If you get rid of him, where are you going? I don't have an answer to that. I don't know what the answer to that is. And I don't think they know the answer to that. But again, I think they're deluding themselves if they don't think that this actually is being registered by Americans. I think they look at it and they go, Jesus Christ. You know, on the very basic things about governance, you guys can't get shit done, man. You guys can't get shit done. So anyway, we'll see what happens. But look, you guys know me. On the substance of an Israel aid bill again at this point, I'm voting no 10 out of 10 times. I think it's crazy for anybody to vote for that, given what we know Israel is doing and how much money we've already given them. That's like a hell no from me. But they're imploding yet again. The civil war is heating up yet again. And it makes me think, is there ever going to be a time now where the Republicans are not at civil war? Because now even Trump is saying, I'm with Johnson. But other Republicans are like, we don't care. Fuck Johnson. Fuck Johnson. That's funny. Funny phrase. Anyway, there you have it. All right, guys, so this is a story that should be way bigger than it is. USC announced that valedictorian Asna Tabassum's commencement speech has been canceled, stating it was necessary to maintain the safety of our campus and students. Quote, I'm surprised that my own university has abandoned me. Now, why does this matter? Let me show you this. Incredible story. USC offers a minor in resistance to genocide. This girl minored in it, was named valedictorian, and then they canceled her speech because she might talk about genocide. So they fear, oh my God, she's going to bring up Palestine. And we can't have that. Cancel her. Censor her. Ban her. Even though she earned that spot as valedictorian, we can't have politically incorrect speech here calling out Israel. So just axe it. This is what's happening. So I'll give you some more on this. The Office of the Provost sent an email Monday to the student body announcing that the valedictorian will not be speaking at this year's graduation. Andrew T. Guzman, the Provost and Senior Vice President for Academic Affairs, said the decision was based on maintaining campus security and safety in the email. The valedictorian, Asna Tabassum, said in a public statement later Monday, she feels the university abandoned her. So in other words, they're saying, look, this is about security. She's saying, okay, well, provide me security, but I still want to speak. Don't abandon me. Quote, this decision is not only necessary to maintain the safety of our campus and students, but is consistent with the fundamental legal obligation, including the expectations of federal regulators, that universities act to protect students and keep our campus community safe, said Guzman in the message to the USC community. The decision was made after days of complaints from students, alumni, and others who viewed the valedictorian's social media activity as anti-Semitic. Oh, so that's what this is really about. That's what this is really about. The safety thing is the way they try to spin it. The reality is there was criticism from other people saying, how dare she? She's an anti-Semite. She criticized Israel. Unacceptable. Don't allow her to speak. Quote, anti-Muslim and anti-Palestinian voices have subjected me to a campaign of racist hatred because of my uncompromising belief in human rights for all. I was hoping to use my commencement speech to inspire my classmates with a message of hope. By canceling my speech, USC is only caving to fear and rewarding hatred, Tabassum said in her two-page statement. Guzman said the decision was made primarily out of concerns for on-campus safety. Quote, the intensity of feelings, fueled by both social media and the ongoing conflict in the Middle East, has grown to include many voices outside of USC and has escalated to the point of creating substantial risks relating to security and disruption at commencement. We cannot ignore the fact that similar risks have led to harassment and even violence at other campuses. In the statement, Tabasum wrote that she met with the office of the provost Sunday to express her own concerns about safety at commencement, to which they responded, the university had the resources to take appropriate safety measures for my valedictory speech, but that they would not be doing so since increased security protections is not what the university wants to present as an image. Guzman, however, wrote that the valedictorian selection was made based on various criteria which did not include social media presence. In the letter to the community, based on these faculty recommendations, I made the final decision. The university had previously announced Tabasum as valedictorian on April 4th in an academic honors convocation. In her Instagram biography, Tabasum links to a pro-Palestine landing page that reads in part, learn about what's happening in Palestine and how to help. Some students took to social media to express their opposition to her as their valedictorian due to the language on the landing page. The website states, Zionism is a racist settler colonial ideology that advocates for a Jewish ethnostate built on Palestinian land. Yeah, that's just factual. Student groups and other on-campus clubs, such as Chabad and Trojans for Israel, called for the reconsideration of the valedictorian. Okay, you guys see what happened here, right? What happened here is there was a Zionist freakout. There was a targeted campaign of outrage directed at her and directed at the school. And they said, I guess they either made threats or implied threats or were so outraged and aggressive that it sort of bullied the school into basically taking back her speech, even though the valedictorian is supposed to give a speech. And here's where we are. So yet again, I'm going to ask the question I always ask. Where are the free speech warriors? Guys, I remember a very similar set of facts when Milo Yiannopoulos was going to various colleges and universities and giving speeches, right? Milo Yiannopoulos would show up. He's a provocateur. He says like horrible things on purpose to try to get a rise and a reaction. And there were all these left-wing students who were angry, who were mad, who were trying to get Milo canceled. And in most instances, what happened? There were these outcry, free speech rights, you can't cancel people. You can't, just because you disagree with them doesn't mean you could shut them down. And Milo would speak and there would be security. That's how this works. And by the way, at the time, I'm sure I took some shit from people because I came out and said, I hate Milo Yiannopoulos. I think he's an asshole. I think he is a provocateur. I think he's a piece of shit. I think his ideology is horrific. I think he's wrong about almost everything. But you know what? Let him speak. Let him speak. Let Ann Coulter speak. Let Ben Shapiro speak on these college campuses. If anything, don't give them what they want, right? Don't boost their profile because then they get to play the victim. And effectively, they ended up being able to give the speech. So they weren't victims. In this instance, they actually canceled the speech. And they canceled the speech, let's be clear, because she majored in or minored in opposition to genocide and was probably going to bring up her opposition to genocide. And then all the little snowflakes and cancel culture lovers and Zionists who were against her basically tried to force the hand of the school to not allow her to speak. So yet again, we come back to the same place we've been over and over, which is what? It seems to be that the biggest crackdown on free speech in this country is always vis-a-vis Israel. Why are there so many anti-BDS laws on the books in various states? I remember it was in Houston, Texas. You couldn't get hurricane relief money unless you signed a pledge saying you don't want to boycott Israel. Remember, what was it, Abby Martin or maybe Rania Kolik? One of them was going to give a speech to a college and they tried to make them sign a pledge that they wouldn't criticize Israel. Guys, in all-out war, an all-out assault on free speech, it is legal in this country to call to boycott this country. You can be an American and call to boycott America, and everybody's fine with it. But if you call to boycott Israel, there's consequences. What are we doing here? This is an all-out assault on basic freedoms. She's the valedictorian. She has a right to give a speech. And I hope she does give the speech and also mention Palestinians, what's happening in Gaza, what Israel is doing. The fact of the matter is, this is how they try to win. This is how they try to rig the public debate. Just cancel, shut down, shut out, ban, shove to the side, censor anybody who's not saying the things we want them to say. These are all politically incorrect facts, she might bring up. Things that make Israel look bad and barbaric and savage and theocratic and like an ethno-state. She might bring up all the carpet bombings of babies and the demolitions of every school in Gaza and the bombing of the hospitals. And she might bring all that up. We can't risk that. And something, something, safety. Okay, look, if safety is the issue, provide safety. Provide safety. Don't cancel her. Don't censor her. Don't ban her. Because she happens to be right about the number one moral issue of our time. By the way, is this going to work in the other direction too? So if you have a pro-Israel person who's going to give a speech, will they then be canceled? Will they then be banned? Will they be censored? Is that what will happen? Or will they let them speak? Gee, I don't know. I wonder what would happen in that scenario. No, because if you were to ban them, what would they say? You're an anti-Semite. Free speech, let them talk. Even if you don't agree with them, let them talk. See how the game is rigged? It reminds me of that media analysis. Remember, I think The Intercept did it. They looked at all the language from all the major media outlets talking about when there's violence done against Palestinians versus violence against Israelis. When it's violence against Israelis, it's all emotive language. Horrific slaughter, massacre, things like that. When it's violence against Palestinian civilians, it's neutral, passive language, not at all emotive. There was a blast that led to X number of casualties, right? Well, who did the blast? Sounds to me like a massacre. Sounds to me like a slaughter. Sounds to me like it's horrific. Sounds to me like terrorism. But the language when discussing Palestinians is passive. The language when talking about Israelis is emotive and strong. And this is the college version of that. You're the valedictorian. You did your job. You're going to give a speech. You might bring up the moral issue of our time. And they're going to, I mean, guys, here, I'll make a good analogy for you. Imagine this was 1962. And a valedictorian was going to give a speech. And they majored in like civil rights or something like that. And they're going to get up and talk about how we need to pass the Voting Rights Bill and the Civil Rights Act. We need to do that. We need equality under the law in this country. We need to end segregation and all that stuff. Matt, and then they look, people are making violent threats because this person is going to bring up equal rights. They're making violent threats. We care about everybody's security, so we have to not allow you to speak. In that context, it would be like, oh, so the school is just chicken shit, or they agree with Bull Connor, right? Like that would be the reaction. Oh, you are trying to, by extension, protect the status quo. And that's unacceptable because there's segregation, right? We'd all look at that like, what a chicken shit move from that college. Well, it's a very similar thing for today. She's going to speak. She's going to call out the genocide. And they're like, we can't have that. We can't have that. Because it'll anger some people. Okay, well, fuck their feelings. I don't care about their feelings. By the way, big Ben Shapiro segment coming on this. Big Dave Rubin segment coming on this. They're going to do a whole thing about, look, I don't agree with her, but let her talk. This is what free speech is about. You got to hear everybody out. You've differing opinions, etc. I get it's coming. Just wait for it. Just wait. Any day now, they'll talk about this as the big assault on free speech rights that it is. They'll do a whole crusade over this. All the right-wingers on social media will be tweeting her name. Let her speak. Don't censor her. Don't cancel her. Don't ban her. I'm waiting. So we have some new polling out here on Trump's hush money criminal case. And it's really interesting. Honestly, there's like 1,000 different takeaways from it. It's a bit of a contradictory poll, I think. So let's dive into it here. Only 1 in 3 U.S. adults think Trump acted illegally in New York hush money case, AP poll shows. So 1 in 3, that's not that high. That's, you know, that seems like a good number for the big guy. You could see here, 35% say he acted illegally. 31% say it was unethical but not illegal. And then only 14% say he did nothing wrong. So now that's a little, before it looked like it was a good number for the big guy. Now, in full context, it actually doesn't look good for the big guy, because a plurality said it was illegal. Then a little less than that said unethical but not illegal. Only 14% agree with Trump's position, which is, I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong at all. Never, ever, ever. I'm perfect. So here, let me give you some more. The first criminal trial facing former President Donald Trump is also the one in which Americans are least convinced he committed a crime, the AP poll finds. By the way, this matches up perfectly with what my intuition was. You guys have heard me say that a number of times, that I really feel like this is the weakest of all the cases against him on the substance. Honestly, even the civil trials I thought were more serious than this. You know, all the business fraud, tax fraud, insurance fraud, all that stuff. People look at that like, you know, you're a fucking scumbag. I'm over here paying my taxes like a sucker, and you're a billionaire and dodging yours and getting favorable loans from banks on terms that you made up, right? So I even think that lands more seriously with the American people than this does. But let's continue. Only about one third of U.S. adults say Trump did something illegal in the hush money case for which the jury selection began Monday, while close to half think he did something illegal in the other three criminal cases pending against him. So again, 35% say he did something illegal here. Over 50% say he did illegal stuff in the other criminal cases. And they're fairly skeptical that Trump is going to get a fair shake from the prosecutors in the case, or that the judge and jurors can be impartial in cases involving him. Still, half of Americans would consider Trump unfit to serve as president if he is convicted of falsifying business documents to cover up hush money payments to a woman who said she had a sexual encounter with him. Okay. So here, look at this poll. Half of U.S. adults say a conviction in hush money case would make Trump unfit to be president. So, yeah, there it is. 50% say, no, I would not consider him fit to be president if it's if he's found guilty in this hush money case, basically. 81% of Democrats say that. Even 47% of independents say he's not fit to be president if he's found guilty in this hush money case. Only 15% of Republicans say he's not fit if he's found guilty in this hush money case. That's wild. Only 29% of U.S. adults would say, yes, I consider him fit to be president if he's found guilty on this. So, I don't know, man. I said it seemed like it wasn't a horrible poll for him, but now the more you get on this, it actually does feel like a bit of a horrible poll for him, right? I guess my concern over this is what I already expressed to you guys before, which is that this is the only case that we're probably going to have a conclusion on before the election. And that kind of scares the shit out of me, right? Because the other cases are just over more serious matters. The fraudulent elector scheme, like, that's a real serious crime. So like Jack Smith's prosecution, even the Georgia prosecution, those things seem more heavy to me. It gets more to the core of what's wrong with Trump and the crimes he committed. This is sort of like an ancillary crime, right? Like the hush money thing on its own would literally be nothing if it didn't also involve, you know, fraudulent business activities. Originally, they thought maybe there was a campaign fund thing associated with it, which would also have it be illegal. But there's not a campaign issue with it. It's just like falsifying business records in terms of when you make the hush money payoff. So I don't know. I'm very curious to see what, because even if you demonstrate perfectly that he did commit a crime and it was a fraudulent record, and there's also a chance that there's somebody on the jury who's just like, I don't care. Not guilty. Right? Because again, if there was ever going to be an issue where somebody might do some sort of jury nullification thing, I could see it being this one, certainly over the fake elector scheme and all the other crimes. So I don't know. Some of these numbers are okay for him. Other numbers are kind of devastating for him. But I think the fact of the matter is all of these legal problems have really built up and built up. And now I think you are beginning to see that impact him in terms of his polling. It never really hurt him for the primary. If anything, it helped him. But in the general, yeah, like Biden's got some massive, massive liabilities. And now in the latest two or three polls, Biden's actually winning by 3 or 4 points. And it's like, well, why is that? Well, I think this is one of the reasons here. that the guy who is the standard bearer for the Republican Party is a colossal fucking criminal who just had to pay out a gazillion dollars for fraud and then now is finally getting some comeuppance for all of his other crimes. So we'll see what happens. I really do wish that they could switch this one out with the Jack Smith case as the first one, but this is all we got. So a lot of it is hinging on Alvin Bragg and on this case. And again, if he's found guilty, I mean, that might swing it to make Biden the favorite. With all of Biden's problems and all of his woes and the aiding and abetting, the genocide and Gaza, all these horrible, horrible things. But if he's found guilty on this, it's very possible Biden then becomes a pretty strong favorite. All right, guys, the zombie has been resurrected. The zombie has been resurrected. Trump TV might be a go. So here's what they say in Raw Story. Trump Media Group plans TV streaming platform. Donald Trump's media group said Tuesday it will launch a streaming television platform, but its shares continue to tumble on Wall Street. The announcement came as 77-year-old former U.S. President Trump sat through a second day of jury selection in his historic criminal trial. No other ex-president in U.S. history has been hauled before a criminal court, and the trial in a Manhattan courthouse comes as scandal-plagued Trump is fighting to make a shock return to the White House in November. Trump is accused of falsifying business records in a scheme to cover up reports on the eve of the 2016 election victory that he had an extramarital affair with a porn star. By the way, this is one of many. People forget about the Karen McDougal one. Everybody remembers the Stormy Daniels one. Very few remember the Karen McDougal one. After winning a debut on Wall Street last month, Trump Media, Trump Media and Technology Group shares have suffered a bruising retreat, denting the Republican candidate's wealth. The company has seen its market value plummet from around $11 billion to less than $3.2 billion based on its $22.97 share price during midday trading Tuesday on the NASDAQ. Shares that trade under the symbol DJT slid more than 12% during the day despite an announcement that the operator of Truth Social will add streaming television to the platform. DJT shares had taken a hit on Monday with a regulatory filing saying Trump's money-losing media company could issue more than 21 million more shares. Stream television content is expected to focus on news, religion, and family-friendly films and documentaries, according to the company. We're expected to move forward with the next big phase for Truth Social, Chief Executive Devin Nunes, remember that guy, said in the release. We aim to provide a permanent home for high-quality news and entertainment that faced discrimination by other channels and content delivery service. What does that mean? I think that's their way of saying we're going to do like Republican conservative stuff, unsurprisingly. The first phase of the rollout will involve adding streaming television to the Truth Social app with a standalone version released in the second phase, blah, 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 blah. This was the speculation back in 2015, 2016, that look, Trump's running. He doesn't really think he can win. He's probably not going to win, but he's setting it all up so that when he's done, he can launch his own conservative network, Trump TV, right? And, look, it was a good theory, and in fact, there's real solid reporting that indicates that early on in the primary, Trump didn't think he could win. But then as time went on, it became clear he could, and then he started taking it more seriously. But obviously, Trump TV didn't come to fruition in 2016 because he won. 2020, he lost. It would have been nice if he exited stage left, and if he did Trump TV at the time, that would have been fine. Would give me a lot of material to cover, I'm sure, because you know they'd hire a murderer's row of freaks and losers. But now they're resurrecting it. Hey, they did Truth Social. Now it's publicly traded. Let's expand. The way we're going to expand is Trump TV. And they're saying not even just news and politics. It's also other things that it's sort of like what the Daily Wire's doing, right? How the Daily Wire has all their conservative stuff and they shove it down your throat while pretending that they're not. And you guys know, right? So, but here's the thing, guys. You do realize what this is, right? This shit is almost certainly not coming. And here's what this is really about. As Brian Krasenstein says here, I'm up 208% since I shorted DJT Trump Media stock. Thank you, MAGA. And this is what we got. Look at this. Ah, that was really loud. This is what we got. Look. This is what's going on with the stock. So remember, when he's struggling for money, he's got to pay that fine, right? He wasn't able to secure a bond. He was looking for ways to cash in, and, you know, they valued this company at $5 billion, and his shares made it so he had billions. And then, like, immediately after, boom, total implosion, total collapse, and is worth less and less and less. So what they're trying to do, what they're attempting to do. How the fuck do we shore up this company? Because remember, guys, Truth Social doesn't make a profit. They valued it at $5 billion. It lost tens of millions of dollars last year. They're not making any money. There's no plan to eventually make money. It's all a scam. So what they're trying to do to shore up the price is, oh, we got these amazing plans in the works. We're going to do Trump TV. It's going to be amazing. It's going to start over here. Invest in our company. Invest. And that's what this is. It's a Hail Mary pass to juice the stock numbers. It's a Hail Mary pass. But look, I don't think it's going to work. Because this, I mean, it sort of landed with a dud, right? And I think almost everybody's reaction, anybody who pays attention, almost anybody's reaction to this is going to be what I just said. Oh, I see what you're doing. You're just trying to shore up the stock. None of this is going to happen. It's just a desperate attempt to hang on. Like, we all see it. You guys are hemorrhaging money. You want to stop hemorrhaging money. By the way, I love how fake everything is. The idea that Truth Social was worth $5 billion. If that's worth $5 billion, my show is worth $2 billion. There you go. I mean, laughable, right? Absolutely laughable. But this is what's going on. And just put it in the mix with all your... I mean, this is a guy who was hawking $60 Bibles the other day. Trump vodka, Trump steaks, Trump the board game, Trump university. Like, it's all scam on top of scam within scam with a dash of fraud on the top, right? That's what we're looking at here. And so it's the Hail Mary pass. Is it going to work? I highly doubt it. Now, having said all that, I'll end on this note. I would love to see a Trump TV. I would love to see a Trump TV to compete with Fox News, where they're a 24/7 news and politics channel, and they just bring in the most psycho of the psycho conservatives you can find, the most hardcore MAGA you could find, have them do, you know, whatever, hour-long shows, copy the format of Fox News. I would love that, because it would give me so much material. It would be glorious. It would do horrible things to the country, but it would be like hilarious at the same time. So I'd love to see it happen. I don't think it's going to happen. So in the wake of the 2020 election, you guys remember how much chaos was ongoing. One of the things that was really hard to wrap your mind around in the moment was the colossal misinformation and disinformation campaign that was being waged really by Trump at the very top, but some other like very prominent psychopaths, where they really went all in on, no, Biden didn't win. It was rigged. It was stolen. Fake election. Like, they really, really leaned into that. And look, there was never any evidence to come to that conclusion. But the extent to which some Fox News hosts leaned in, the extent to which Newsmax, One America News Network, the way they leaned in, the way the MAGA types on social media leaned in, I mean, it was real. It was like a national hysteria was, you know, falling on top of the right wing. They were losing it, man. Well, one of the things that happened in the fallout to that, of course, is that what we had January 6th, the fake elector scheme didn't really work. But then there were lawsuits, right? You had Dominion and Smartmatic. A lot of these companies said, hey, we have their receipts. You guys absolutely defamed us. It's not close. It's not up in the air. It's not a question. You said things that were demonstrably untrue, and you did it with the intent to, you know, maliciously smear us in vile fashion, ruining our, you know, our name, and we're suing over it. So one of the things that happened, as I'm sure all of you remember, Fox News had to settle with Dominion and pay out $787 million. I think it's the biggest defamation payout of all time in U.S. history. Now, why did they pay out, and why did they pay out that much? Because what was about to happen in the court process was the little thing called discovery. It's like, okay, we're going to get all your text messages, we're going to get all your emails, all your internal correspondence, it's all going to be brought to light. We're going to know exactly what drunk-ass Jeanine Pirro is saying behind the scenes, we're going to know exactly what bow-tie-wearing-ass Tucker Carlson is saying, we're going to know what Hannity believes, like all this stuff's going to come out. We had little bits and pieces come out, and what we learned is they are... It's just as it appears, right? Like, these hosts are actually way smarter than they pretend to be. Behind the scenes, they're like, Sidney Powell's fucking crazy. This one's fucking crazy. That one's fucking crazy. They're saying things that are untrue, but I don't want to piss off the audience. What should I do? I got to try to walk a tightrope here. I got to give in to them without fully giving it. Like, it was all, it's just so, like, you can't trust a word any of these people say, because they made very clear, we actually understand that this wasn't stolen, but we're going to pretend like it kind of was. So they had to pay out $787 million. Guys, that was only one of the lawsuits. There are many, many more lawsuits. Okay? Look at this. Smartmatic and OAN, which is One America News, reach settlement in election rigging defamation case. Smartmatic has reached a settlement with One America News Network over claims that the news outlet amplified false claims that the voting systems company rigged the results of the 2020 election. Smartmatic has resolved its litigation against OAN through a confidential settlement, said attorney Eric Connolly, who is representing the voting company in the lawsuit. The attorney for OAN, Chip Babcock, hilarious name, confirmed an agreement between the parties, but also said the details were confidential. That's interesting. A stipulation of dismissal was filed today in U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia. Smartmatic still has lawsuits pending against Newsmax and Fox News for their amplification of election rigging claims. OAN, though, was perhaps the most aggressive in advancing Donald Trump's false claim that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. Trump's attorney general and election security expert, among others, rejected those claims, and the then president's campaign and his allies lost dozens of court cases challenging the results. In his lawsuit filed in 2021, Smartmatic alleged that as other news organizations publicly acknowledged that they had seen no evidence to support claims of election fraud or of voting machines switching votes, OAN mocked those news network organizations and doubled down on its attacks on voting machines. OAN knew its assertions about Smartmatic were not true. OAN had seen no evidence to support the assertions, but OAN chose to spread disinformation. Smartmatic provided election technology and services to Los Angeles County during the 2020 election, but not anywhere else in the country. In the lawsuit, the company said that OAN published report after report naming Smartmatic as one of the voting machine companies that had conspired to steal the election by switching votes from President Trump to current President Biden. It was all a lie, and OAN knew it. In response, OAN characterized the lawsuit as meritless and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so guys, okay, there are so many things that come out. If you go deep on this, you learn so many amazing facts. Like, for example, Smartmatic only was in, like, one California district or county or whatever, and you had all these idiots on air saying that Smartmatic was in, like, all these different states. And it's just like, if you can't even get that basic fact right, how's anybody supposed to believe anything you say? You, of course, have the lies about Dominion and Smartmatic, about how Venezuela hacked the machines and Maduro helped Biden win. Actually, some people originally said Hugo Chavez. He was dead. He was dead, but they say, oh, he helped flip the election to Joe Biden. Insane. So what do we learn? There was some sort of settlement reached behind this. I would love to know the details. I'm dying to know the details. Because we already know Dominion got Fox to pay out $787 million. Eventually, this is probably going to leak, and we're going to know. But my guess is they had to pay an arm and a fucking leg, bro. An arm and a leg. I don't know if they ever do this for these kinds of cases, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got like a percentage of the company moving forward, right? Like, these guys, it's basically like a textbook case of defamation. Like, just textbook, they hit every single check mark on it. And so, they gotta pay up, bro. They gotta pay up. Now, by the way, we're still not done. We're still not done. There's also, okay, so Dominion sued Fox. I don't know, but I kind of think they also sued OAN and Newsmax. But I know Smartmatic has a Newsmax lawsuit, and maybe Smartmatic, I don't know, they might even have a Fox lawsuit. And in one of these cases, I think it's the Newsmax one, I think it's Smartmatic Newsmax. In that case, they have to turn over their correspondence. And I think it's for September of this year, we're going to get all that stuff that comes out. Like, the trial is going to happen September of this year. And so these right-wing outlets are not done getting clonked over the head with truth. They're not. Look, let's be clear. When it comes to free speech, nobody is more pro-free speech than I am. If you have somebody who sincerely and genuinely believes the election is stolen, and here's why I think that and all this stuff, that's fine. That's totally fine. They have a right to say those things. They're wrong, but it's not defamation. It's not malicious, et cetera, et cetera. What you need to understand, and this is what's coming out with these various cases, is that these people knew they were lying and they did it anyway. and they did it anyway. And at that point, it becomes malicious. It becomes malicious. You know you're wrong. You know it's defamatory. You know it's dragging the name of this company through the mud and impacting potential future attempts at getting contracts and things of that nature. And they did it anyway. Guys, there's a big difference. When the intent is there, there is no more free speech argument. There is, it doesn't exist anymore. This isn't just, oh, they sincerely are wrong. This is, they are malicious fucking liars who are parroting things that are comically untrue and wouldn't stand up to the most basic Google fact check, right? That's what's going on here. So I'd love to know how much they had to pay. For Dominion, it was $787 million. Fox had to pay them. Still got Newsmax coming up. OAN right here, they just settled. But the Smartmatic Newsmax one, we should get some juicy stuff coming out of that too. It's a real, like, look, if anything should give you some hope for the future, it should be this idea that there really has been consequences for some people vis-a-vis January 6th, the fraudulent elector scheme. Obviously, Trump's in court now over that. Won't happen before the election, but he's in court over that. And so I know that Trump is going to try again if he loses to do the same fucking thing, to try to stay in office again. But with the extreme consequences that right-wing media had to face, I think it's a lot less likely that they go along with him now, because they just had to pay $787 million because they did that last time. And Newsmax and OAN, maybe they'll go along with it again. But remember, guys, Newsmax has even been doing disclaimers now over anything involving the 2020 election. Newsmax accepts the results as legal and final. They've been doing that now because of these lawsuits. So maybe they won't be as quick the next time. Trump actually won again against Joe Biden. If that doesn't happen, they'll be more unlikely to go down that path. But who knows? Maybe they're so extreme and so psychotic that they can't help themselves. I guess we'll find out together. All right, y'all. This is fun. We have an elite media ghoul now begging Joe Biden to not debate Donald Trump. This is in The Atlantic, written by the horrific Bush-era neocon David Frum. He says the following: why Biden should not debate Trump. The networks want their show, but to give the challenger equal status on a TV stage would be a dire normalization of his attempted coup. David Frum, let me explain something to you. I can go toe-to-toe with you on the issue of hating Trump. In fact, I would argue I hate Trump way more than you do. Why? Because you hate him for, like, characteristics and qualities. Like, who he is as a person is more your issue. I have an issue not only with him as a person, I have an issue with his policies. You actually agree with like 85 to 90% of his policies. So I'm second to nobody on hating Trump. The fact of the matter is, ain't no normalization, bitch. He's the Republican nominee for president. He's arguably one of the most or the most famous man on the planet. Whether or not you want to acknowledge it, he is on equal footing in a challenge with Joe Biden. Why, don't debate him, because then it'll look like it's a presidential race and you two are challenging each other. David, that is what's happening. You could shove your head in the fucking sand, but that's the reality. Don't normalize this man who's already been normalized 57 trillion times over. Guys, that ship has sailed. If you were to say to me, hey man, the year's 2016, the way we want you to not normalize Trump is to be indifferent to him and then he'll just go away. That may have worked back then. We are so far past that now. He's already the nominee on the Republican ticket in 2024. He's normalized no matter what you say or do. Okay, you guys could tell this argument kind of triggers me here. A consortium of television networks yesterday released a joint statement inviting President Joe Biden and his presumptive opponent Donald Trump to debate on their platforms. Quote, there's simply no substitute for the candidates debating each other and before the American people. Their visions for the future of our nation. President Biden's spokesperson should answer like this. The Constitution is not debatable. The president does not participate in forums with a person under criminal indictment for his attempt to overthrow the Constitution. In their letter of invitation, the networks refer to presidential debates as a competition of ideas. But one of the two men they're inviting turned the last election into a competition of violence. Trump tried to seize the presidency by force in 2021. Of course, they have the thing where what do you have to do? Fucking sign up in order to see the rest of this? What fucking assholes. I would never pay for an Atlantic subscription. Never in a million years. If Trump had not occupied the presidency at the time of his attempted coup d'etat, he would very likely be already serving a lengthy prison term for his alleged crimes against the 2020 election. That's actually true. Earlier this month, the principal figure in the January 6th attack was sentenced to 7 years in prison, the latest of many such serious convictions and sentences. Fortunately for Trump, the U.S. justice system is highly cautious, deferential, and slow when dealing with persons of wealth and importance. That's also true. Although the followers have been punished, the indicted leader of the plot is unlikely to face trial before Election Day 2024. Until tried and convicted, Trump must be regarded as innocent in the eyes of the law. But the political system has eyes of its own. No doubt exists about what Trump did or why, or what his actions meant. Trump lost an election, then incited a violent mob to attack the Capitol. He hoped that the insurrectionists would terrorize, kidnap, or even kill his own vice president in order to stop the ceremony to formalize the victory of Biden and his vice president, Kamala Harris. By disrupting the ceremony, Trump's scheme to cast the election's results to the House of Representatives were Republicans, blah, blah. This is all that happened on January 6th. It's all true. This is all true. The single most important question on the ballot for 2024 is, does any of this matter? Is violence by losers to overturn election results an acceptable tool of politics? Is anti-constitutional violence by election losers just another political issue, like inflation or immigration or foreign policy? The television executives apparently believe that, yes, violence is just another issue. If there is one thing Americans can agree on during this polarized time, they write, it is that the stakes of this election are exceptionally high. The stakes are high would be a fair way to describe an election like that of 1980, when Americans faced a choice between two very different approaches to taxes and spending. It would be a fair way to describe the 2004 election, when Americans were asked to choose between an early exit from the Iraq War and staying the course. But it seems a morally trivializing way to describe an election in which one of the candidates has been criminally indicted for his part in a conspiracy to overthrow the Constitution. Okay, so I have a number of responses to this. What's the way to remedy this situation? If your argument is Trump is so beyond the pale that we shouldn't be in this place, I agree with you. But how do you remedy it? Okay, well, one answer was they should have launched the investigations earlier. They should have indicted him criminally earlier. You should have the trials earlier. Agreed. Okay, well, we didn't get there. So what do you want to do about it? You could pass some sort of a law where if you're under criminal indictment, you can't run for office, right? I might support that law. I guess it would depend on the crime. If it's like a weed crime, it's fine. If it's you committed murder, not fine, right? Like, how do you want to remedy this? His answer is just, let's say he's beyond the pale and then not debate. But the thing is, we all want him to be beyond the pale, but he's not. So you have to acknowledge that reality as it is. To the point about the Constitution, he brings up, like, this guy said he wants to terminate the Constitution. I know. All the more reason to debate and remind everybody, he said he wants to terminate the Constitution. He says he wants to suspend the Constitution. You can't just say, here's a litany of the horrible things he did, and that's why we need to not address him, not acknowledge him, not debate him. All the list, the litany of terrible things he said and did and believes, that's all the more reason to bring it up. So, look, the only answer, like, you would have needed the timeline to be sped up. Start the investigation earlier, do the indictment earlier, have him in court before even running, right? Like, that would have been the answer. Then it's possible he gets found guilty, he's in prison, you know, that he's not going to win from prison. I know some people disagree with that, but I think he certainly wouldn't win from behind bars. That's my take on it. But in that scenario, okay, there you go. Then David Frum gets what he wants, and I'm good with it too. But, like, that's not where we are. That's not where we are. And so his way of dealing with that seems to be, let's just pretend like he's not as popular as he is and doesn't have as good of a chance as he does. But I'm sorry, you have to grapple with that. I don't know how else to get it through to you. You have to grapple with that. And, you know, and by the way, to the his argument is Trump is so beyond the pale, you shouldn't normalize him at all, right? You could make that same argument for Biden. He's aiding and abetting a genocide that Israel is doing in Gaza, sending them money, sending them weapons. And so people would fairly say, I also think Biden's beyond the pale. It's a different kind of beyond the pale, but it's also beyond the pale. So by that logic, should we pay no mind, pay no attention to Biden, say you're, you know, out of polite society, etc.? No, look, we were dealt the hand that we were dealt, and we have to deal with the facts as they exist. That's the bottom line. All right, let's continue. Imagine such a presidential debate. President Biden, you could hear the moderator say, we'll go to Mr. Trump's alleged violent coup in a moment, but in this segment, we are discussing food prices. The role of the television networks here is, unfortunately, not an innocent one. The stakes of the election are high, is a commencement address way of phrasing the thought, we are anticipating huge ratings. Trump is box office, everybody knows that, and box office translates into revenues at a time when television is losing them. For TV executives to convince themselves that what is good for their own bottom line is good for the country seems very easy. But good for the country is radically not the case here. It's funny, right? I agree with the point that he's making, but this logic also applies to him. He was one of the members of the Bush administration that got us into the illegal and offensive war in Iraq, where hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians died, millions of people were displaced, thousands of our own troops were killed. And so that's not just another issue to debate. You, David Frum, are a war criminal. In any reasonable society, you would be nowhere near any platform or position of power, or the ability to write an article where thousands of people read it. That's true. It is true of Trump. He tried to do a violent coup and he still exists in the ether and is leading on the Republican side. So, but again, if I accept your logic, which is fine, you also would be excised from polite society based on that logic. But it's funny. He wants to draw the line in a way where I'm still allowed in society, even though I'm a war criminal and, you know, I have blood on my hands from all the decisions I made in the administration I was with. I'm allowed, but he's not. Imagine watching the debate with the sound off. What would you see? Two men, both identified as president, standing side by side, receiving equal deference from some of the most famous hosts and anchors on American television. The message, violence to overthrow an election is not such a big deal. Some Americans disapprove of it, but others have different opinions. That's why we have debates. Coup d'etat, tip of the hat or wag of the finger? Look, again, I wish we lived in a country where Trump now had a 7% approval rating and was away in shame. In a cave somewhere, right? I wish we don't live there. So what do you want to do about that? Just pretend like we live there? Or are you going to acknowledge there is a race going on right now? There's an election. You need to defeat him. You need to landslide him. In order to do that, the best approach is not head in the sand, pretend he doesn't exist. The best approach is bring up all of these things, bring them up to his face, hammer them home, make it the dominant narrative, and make it so that he gets defeated. Because obviously, the criminal cases are not defeating him fast enough. So you're going to have to defeat him politically, whether or not we like that. And I agree, I don't like that, but that's where we are. For Biden to refuse to rub elbows with Trump won't make Trump go away, of course. The Confederacy did not go away when Abraham Lincoln refused to concede the title of president to Jefferson Davis. That's not why Lincoln consistently denied Davis that title. Lincoln understood how demoralizing it would be to Union loyal Americans if he accepted the claim that Davis was a president rather than a rebel and an insurrectionist. Biden should understand how demoralizing it would be to democracy loyal Americans if he accepted the claim that Trump is more than a January 6th defendant. But okay, again, here's the disconnect. You can acknowledge all of that about Trump and still get in the fucking ring and fight. Because he's in the ring. And if you're not there, you let him set the narrative. You let him dominate with his talking points, right? I accept he's an insurrectionist. I accept he uses political violence. I accept he tried to do a coup. I'm against all of that. But for you to say don't debate him, you're not winning in that scenario. You don't get to walk out scot-free and say, I really got him there. No, because you blink and you look up and all of a sudden he was leading by 5 points in the polls. It was only when Biden started swinging at Trump's face and throwing haymakers within the past month that now the numbers have changed and Biden's doing a little better than he was. Biden has engaged in many high-level television debates over the years, vice presidential debates in 08 and 2012, debates for the he did good in both those, by the way, debates for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1987, 2007, and 2019 and 20. Biden also debated then-President Trump in fall of 2020. Biden is and was a capable television communicator. He was, he definitely not is, as he demonstrated again in his recent State of the Union address. Biden delivered the address with such force and skill that Trump had to imply that Biden must be relying on performance-enhancing drugs. To be fair, I think he is. I also think Trump is, but it's fine. At their age, I want them taking that. If DeSantis or Haley had won the Republican nomination in 2024, Biden would and should have debated them. But this is different. That's the thing. It's really not. It's a weird, smug, condescending way to approach life, right? And politics. It's like you have to navigate in the world we exist in, not the one that you want us to exist in. And it's just like, I think the end result of listening to somebody like David Frum is Trump is more likely to win. You understand what I'm saying? Obviously, he disagrees, but I think he's wrong. But look, final point again, I'll just reiterate one I made earlier, which is, I agree that it would be much healthier and much more reasonable if we lived in a society that already said, look, this guy is way beyond the pale and nobody wants anything to do with him. He has a 7% approval rating or whatever. I actually agree with that. I wish we did live in that society. And I try to make arguments towards those ends to make that be the case, right? But that same point also applies to David Frum. He's one of the Bush era neocon war criminals. He should also be not in polite society anymore. And so any line he would draw that like keeps Trump out but him in, his moral compass is super fucking warped. So I don't want to hear his highfalutin, condescending ass arguments about how somehow not engaging in a debate allows you to keep your purity and your prospects of winning. Like that doesn't add up. Doesn't add up even a little bit. You guys are going to love this story. I got a real kick out of this story. So you all remember Ron DeSantis when he was the hottest governor in the country and his polling was high and he won a big reelection during the midterms when other Republicans underperformed. That's why the New York Post had that cover that said DeFuture. So he was on a streak of getting all this conservative legislation through. But what was particularly interesting about it is he was using the rhetoric of like freedom a lot. He would talk about COVID and say, oh, these blue states are shutting everything down and the federal government is shutting everything down. And us here in Florida, we led the way for freedom. No lockdowns, no mask mandates, all these things. He was like, freedom, 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 freedom. He would say talk about it a lot in his speeches. But the laws he was passing during his streak of, you know, making conservatives fall in love with him, all of those things were anti-freedom, right? Like the Don't Say Gay bill, as it's called, where, you know, a teacher can't even put a picture. If you have a gay teacher, the teacher can't even put a picture on their desk of like them and their spouse, because then that might lead to a kid asking a question or something. And so you can't bring that up. So you can't have that there. All the anti-woke stuff that he was passing. And the protest crackdown bill. Remember that? They like flipped it when it came to if like a protester's blocking a roadway and you run over them, it's like, are you really to blame? Remember that? We talked, I think The Intercept reported on that. All these things are anti-freedom, anti-First Amendment, hilariously, right? But his biggest one was what? The book ban bill. They do, okay, you guys know the tap dance that they do. They go out there and they say, do you want pornography in a first grader's hand? What a sick, sick person you are. Nobody wants pornography in a first grader's hand. You fucking idiot. The problem here is, once you start doing all these book bans, right, particularly in these school libraries and school classrooms and stuff, do you really think only the bad, bad books are going to be taken out? By the way, there isn't. There's not like there's Playboy magazines in kindergarten, right? That's not there. Let's stop pretending like it is, right? But most of the book bans, of course, end up being things that have nothing to do with sex or pornography. And so it was open season. Anybody makes a complaint, this is the way the law worked. Anybody made a complaint about any book, boom, it gets pulled and has to get reviewed. So the default position is whoever's saying pull it is by default correct and then we'll review it. And you have these ridiculous scenarios where all bookshelves were like covered in these certain districts, school districts in Florida, where like you couldn't see any of the titles of any of the books. You had school libraries, things were being taken out left and right. And I remember we covered an article. There was this particularly insane evangelical fundamentalist Christian woman who was just on a crusade, just getting everything and anything banned that she had any slight issue with. So now we get an amazing update to this. DeSantis tweaks Florida book challenge law, blames liberal activist who wanted Bible out of schools. So in other words, there's an atheist who comes along who goes, look, I don't want to play this game, but if we're going to play this game, I'll play this game. Oh, you want to take out the books that have violence, that have pornography, that have inappropriate things for children in there? Boy, oh boy, do I have one for you. The Bible. This is a brilliant troll. This is a brilliant troll. This is like what the Satanic Temple people do. And I actually don't think this guy's affiliated with them. But anyway, here's what they say in the AP. 2 years ago, Democrats repeatedly and forcefully warned Republicans and Governor Ron DeSantis that a new law making it easier to challenge school books was so broadly worded that it would create havoc across the state. Now they can say, I told you so. DeSantis backtracked on his 2022 law on Tuesday when he signed a bill narrowing its focus. He blamed liberal activists for abusing the law, not the citizens whose objections to certain books account for the majority of book removals from school libraries and classrooms. Quote, "The idea that someone can use the parents' rights and the curriculum transparency to start objecting to every single book," this is his words, "to try to make a mockery of this is just wrong," DeSantis said the day before the bill signing. "That's performative. That's political." So in other words, he signs the bill. The actual implications of that bill are chaos. And he's like, "Well, this bill is not right." Yeah, dude, that's on you. Coincidentally, PEN America, a group that fights book bans, issued a report Tuesday saying Florida is responsible for 72% of the books that have been pulled from the nation's schools in the first half of the current school year. Jesus Christ. The organization said liberal activists are not the ones who should be blamed for abusing the law. Quote, "The majority of books that we see being removed are books that talk about LGBTQ plus identities, that include characters of color, that talk about race and racism, and that include depictions of sexual experiences in the most broadest interpretation of that understanding," said Casey Meehan, PEN America's Freedom to Read program director. So again, most of the books that are being removed reference LGBTQ stuff, reference characters of color, talk about racism and race, and would broadly mention something involving sexuality. It's not some explicit. There were a few examples of like explicit books that shouldn't be in schools. But like, okay, you want to get those ones out of there, fine. But it went so far beyond that. Again, they're leading the nation in book bans. I think we have a number here in a minute. Those challenges are being made by conservative individuals and groups such as Moms for Liberty. The original law allowed any person, parent or not, district resident or not, to challenge books as often as they wanted. Once challenged, a book has to be pulled from the shelves until the school's district resolves the complaint. The new law limits people who don't have students in a school district to one challenge per month. The PEN America report says Florida is responsible for, get this, 3,135 of the 4,349 school book bans in the United States so far this year. 3,135 book bans. Are there really 3,135 books that are unacceptable? Just this week in conservative Clay County, one person challenged 40 books. 40. Before dropping out of the Republican presidential primary, DeSantis campaigned heavily on his education platform, including the law giving people more power to challenge books. Quote, "It's just a big mess that DeSantis created, and now he's trying to disown it. But I don't know if he'll be able to distance himself from this because he campaigned on it so hard," said a House Democratic leader. "It's not the only example of the tough-talking governor having to make adjustments to ideology he championed while seeking the White House. He also made concessions in the settlement of several lawsuits involving the state and Walt Disney World. The dispute between them erupted after the Don't Say Gay law in 2022. The Associated Press asked DeSantis's office for examples of liberal activists abusing the law, and it provided one. Chaz Stevens, a South Florida resident who has often lampooned government, Stevens raised challenges in dozens of school districts over the Bible, dictionaries, and thesauruses. Yeah, by the way, how far do you want to go with this? Dictionaries have plenty of dirty words in there. Thesauruses as well. Should we get rid of those? And again, the Bible, if you're really going to talk about problematic books, I mean, we don't even need... There's genocide in the Bible. That's as dark as it gets. Remember the story of Lot in the Bible? Isn't that the story where, like, this guy's own daughters rape him? Should that be in there? The change to the law ensures that book challenges are limited for individuals, like Chaz, who do not have children with access to the school's district materials, DeSantis spokeswoman Julia Friedland said in an email. She didn't reply to follow-up emails requesting more examples. So, is that one guy who was using their own logic against them. Again, this is what the Satanic Temple does. So, all right, if you want to open this door, I don't want to open this door, but if you guys want to open this door, let's open that door. Sorry, but the Bible's going to be like the first thing on the fucking chopping block. So now, he had to change the law. At the end of the day, they probably should, and maybe will, change it even more. Because it's untenable. It's untenable. There's a lot of psychos out there. There's a lot of authoritarian folks out there. You don't want people willy-nilly, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that. And by the way, let's be clear. The internet has everything. Even if you try to, let's protect the kids from the bad books or whatever. it's one fucking Google search. You think they don't know how to turn off safe search and shit like that? They can get anything and everything. And I'm not necessarily saying that's good, but let's stop kidding ourselves here, right? So, anyway, well, if you become authoritarian and you crack down on freedom, turns out it comes back to bite you in the ass. Who knew? All right, guys, that's the show. Thank you all for listening. Everybody subscribe to the channel. Click that bell icon so you get a notification when a video drops. All the same normal shameless plugs. Thanks for supporting the show on Patreon. That link's below if you'd like to help out. Thank you for tipping on YouTube. The thanks button's below as well. Sign up for Crystal Kyle and Friends on Substack. We're talking to Motaz this week, who's a Palestinian protester who's been confronting people in Congress and doing a fantastic job. Definitely going to want to check that out. And that's all I got for you guys, man. Everybody have a great rest of your day. I love y'all, and I will talk to you later.